This is Will's Band of the Week for June 8th, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will along with Barrett.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hey, hey.
Once again, fully staffed in studio, Fourth Bedroom Studios, Madison, Wisconsin, once again.
I'm trying to make that my, like, my call, the hey, hey. I think I do it at the beginning of every... Now, if I did the three, I think that'd be like copyright infringement, because I think Fat Albert has the hey, hey, hey.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
But didn't Jack Brickhouse have the hey, hey?
Oh, damn.
So you're going to need to do four A's.
Somebody else has got to have four, so yeah. I'll have to do a 5, 6.
Yep.
Like the first half of the podcast will just be me greeting.
Right.
No, I was just thinking about that. Every time that we're introduced, I'll just say, hi, and then Chris always has something creative. Do you plan those ahead of time, or is it just... extemporaneous.
Yeah. I generally, when we do these on the day that I do them, I take the second half of work off.
Right.
You know, work on the routine, the script.
Yeah.
Let me see the palm of your hand. I bet you wrote. It says hey, yes. Hey on it.
It says lower taxes, less regulation. Hey, hey. We were just talking. We're all enjoying a beverage here. What is the purpose of beers that don't make the twist caps anymore? Is there any actual flavor, or is it just by saying you don't have a twist cap, it means just you're higher class?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you would do that.
It can't have any kind of taste, you know, connotation or taste.
Right.
Is it harder to do the twist style in a small batch? Maybe that's it. You know, the beers that are not twist off tend to be like the microbrews, and the major brands that produce millions of cases of beer a day or whatever, they have the twist offs.
Right. Maybe the small guys are buying the, you know, bottling line equipment from the old guys.
Yeah, that could be.
You know?
Anyway, it seems to be fairly aggravating when you have a beer in front of you and you cannot open it without an opener.
My theory is shot because Chris has a Red Hook,
mm-hmm.
and that's owned by Budweiser.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, they must have bought them out because it wasn't originally, was it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it's got the old-fashioned opener needed.
Yeah.
And I've got an Oberon. Bell's certainly should be able to afford modern capping equipment.
Right, and since we're declaring our beer, I've got a Hopalicious, Madison's finest, or one of the finest.
You're listening to Beer Talk.
That's right.
On the Will's Band of the Week podcast.
You've got to mix it up, though. You got to keep it fresh.
Anybody got any music news? I don't think there is any news this week. And we've got a lot of music to talk about, so let's just bypass the music news. Maybe at the end of the podcast, Barrett will come up with like the 30th anniversary of something.
It's got to be the 30th anniversary of something.
In fact, I just heard that
it was my neighbor's birthday.
I forgot what it was, but there was a 30th anniversary thing, but I forgot it, so it's not going to be on the podcast.
Was it your neighbor's 30th birthday?
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday, neighbor.
Wow. Cool. That's young.
That is young. And of course, when anybody turns 30, like at work or somebody you know or whatever, like, oh my God, I'm so old.
Yeah. Right.
How do you react to that? Like, what
punch
do you think
him in
about
the nuts?
Yeah, you just say, well, it's all relative, you know?
Yeah.
You know, people could contact us by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com.
Oh, yeah.
Or they could also go to the website, willsband.net, and you can post a comment there. You can also go to iTunes, and we strongly recommend iTunes. You can do a search there and find us. Just search for Will's Band of the Week.
Smoke signals also appropriate.
That's right. And we've got a Facebook page, too, for all of you Facebook people. It's called the Will's Band of the Week podcast. But don't go to just plain old Will's Band of the Week, because there's some guy who, he's some kind of bad guy, I think.
Is he still there?
Look for the seal of approval.
We might have terrorized him right off the internet with all this.
I don't know.
Talk and getting our fans turned on it.
Right, I'm sure our fans are a rambunctious crowd. They just,
like,
what are all these emails doing?
Right, totally.
Are we also available via ham radio?
We'll have to work on that. I think we could be. We just need to announce the frequency, right?
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Right.
We should do that. I think that would be fun, a pirate radio broadcast.
Well, that's essentially what this is, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, but it's not.
We could say anything we want. I could say anything I wanted right now.
But it would be It would be cool if we were just on a frequency and somebody could be driving their truck, you know, through Cincinnati at 3:30 in the morning and they could find us. Now, that'd be cool, wouldn't it?
I suppose that would be cooler than this, yeah.
Right, okay. That would be the way to do it, is to find unsuspecting listeners instead of...
Right, instead of the telling our self-selected...
But anyway...
The people dying to hear us.
We need some people to accidentally hear us, because then they might accidentally like it, right? The
right.
podcast, and then...
That really is the only way to like this podcast, is accidentally.
By accident, exactly. I agree. So, what we thought we'd do this week, we didn't have a consensus band, but we all had music we've been listening to, so we thought we'd sort of do a catch-up podcast and tell you about some of the music we've been listening to, and, you know, out of all the picks we're going to have this week, there should be something that anybody out there would like.
We need like a little musical thing, like the little grab bag or potpourri.
Right. We're really lacking on the sound effects. I got to work on that, but theoretically it's something I could do, but...
I could hit this microphone against Barrett's head. That might make some noise.
Be a good sound effect, yeah.
Get that on tape so we don't have to do that every week.
Yeah. You know. Only one injury, and then we can just, you know, reuse it.
What do you think about that, though, having music to segue between our little segments and stuff? That'd be kind of fun.
I think the professional podcasters would say that you should do that, yes. Because then your podcast is less monotonous, because it's just, right now, it's just us talking, right? But it gives it a pace if you have, like, the music to go from the transition from one segment to the next.
So, Barrett, your job is to go find a monkey that plays the harmonica.
All right.
And we'll do so on cue in between our little segments.
All right.
Okay, easy enough?
Maybe there'd be another way, but that sounds reasonable. Let's go with that.
I can really think of no other way.
Well, I trust you, so I'll look for that.
Okay, well, I was thinking that because Barrett's name starts with a B, that's the earliest in the alphabet, so I think Barrett should go first and tell us...
Beat me by one letter.
...what he's been listening to this week, and in the most recent of weeks.
Well, I've been... we had a special request feature day at the coffee shop. One of our employees wanted to have a soul day, soul and funk. So, you know, I didn't have a whole lot at home. I had, of course, the Kings Go Forth. I brought that out and you know, Marvin Gaye and some Motown and stuff like that. But I thought I better go out and get some more stuff just so that this is halfway respectable. And one of the things I got was Curtis Mayfield's Superfly soundtrack recording from 1972. And, it's always in the top whatever albums on Rolling Stone or Pitchfork, you name it. It's always on there. And I've always been kind of curious. I didn't even know any of the songs.
And you're holding a physical CD in your hands.
I'm holding a physical CD.
Wow.
This was put out by Rhino 11 years ago. And the song that I chose... And I listened to this more than anything else this past week. So that's why I kind of broke the rule. There wasn't we don't have a rule book here, but I think the understanding was, let's come back next week with some new music that we can talk about that you've been listening to. But I was listening to old music and I thought, this is a rock and roll podcast. And rock and roll is not about rules.
That's right.
Right? So I'm breaking the rule.
Exactly.
I want to play number 3, Freddy's Dead.
Home, but his hope wasn't right, and he should have known. His heart.
So anybody listening that was thinking about getting into a life of drug dealing, this is a song with a positive message.
It really is a public service announcement on your behalf. So
this guy was pushing dope for his dealer. That's in the vernacular in 1972, pushing dope. And now Freddie's dead. He's been dead for going on 40 years now.
I think I could honestly listen to that for like 45 minutes straight. Just like the same,
isn't
same riff.
Good?
It's awesome. Yeah, it's great.
I really love it. And I knew generally what this would sound like when I bought it, but it's I like it a lot more than I was imagining I would.
Do you have another track?
Sure. Let's see.
Were there any hits? It would seem like
That was the single off it.
I remember it, but vaguely because it was a long time ago.
Right. Okay. I guess my second one I'll pick is the first one, Little Child Running Wild. And this is the one, I just learned this from reading the liner notes. He already had this song written, but all the rest of the songs were written after kind of seeing the movie. The director showed it to him and was like, write some songs that we can use in the action and that address some of the things going on. But this one just kind of happened to fit in.
Yeah, it is weird now when you go back and listen to soundtracks. This isn't the case of this, but some soundtracks you can tell when the songs were like written for the movie.
Right.
And so like random things happen. Like he walks down the street, decides he wants a sandwich, walks into a sandwich shop, says no pickle. And of course that's what's going on in the movie. Says I'd like a Diet Pepsi.
You've seen those YouTube videos of like Tears for Fears and stuff where I think we probably talked about that.
Where it's like the literal translation of what's happening. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like for Take on Me. I don't know. That's like, I can't remember.
You know, it really does sort of paint a visual picture though. I don't think I ever saw this movie.
I never.
But when I hear that music, I sort of picture a like a dark, rainy, urban street or right. something.
There's one song on here that is classic soundtrack music, and it's called Junkie Chase, and it's an instrumental. And you can just imagine like quick
two
cuts.
Guys chasing down
yeah,
the street.
Like guy getting chased, car chase, and on foot and. Quick edits and
okay. Play some
of
Junkie Chase. We got no time requirement here.
This is number four.
Junkie Chase.
We'll cut like into the middle of Junkie Chase a little bit. Here it is. Oh yeah, it's definitely a chase going on right now.
Stop, sucker! Pushed over some trash cans.
Oh, that's good.
I can't listen to that without wanting to run from the cops.
That's what it's.
Let's go make that happen.
Good, that would be good running music.
Yes.
For training, going out for a run, don't you think?
Yeah, especially if you're followed by a Doberman.
You can pretend. You just pretend that you're being chased.
And you're a junkie.
Right. You could put like
I don't have to pretend that.
Right. Chris already has a little bag of drugs in his running shorts, so he doesn't even have to pretend.
Yeah, I make shipments on my run.
You're okay. A drug runner.
Well, I love the... Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I do love the use of the soul flute, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's key, which is going to be the first name of my first album.
Soul
flute.
So you guys liked it?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Soul flute.
Yes. Totally unexpected.
Yes, you're going to have to let me borrow that.
That's Curtis Mayfield from 1972. Chris, your name's next in the alphabet.
Oh, wow. How about this?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me preface this by saying last week, you may remember, I was complaining about listening to too much like whiny folk music. So this week, in our grab bag or potpourri, as it were... I've got some whiny folk music. Everybody knows that I love Laura Marling. She has a new one out. Her album was one of my favorites a couple years ago. We have discussed Laura Marling on the show several times. She's in the holy triumvirate of Laura's, Laura Veers, Marling, and Gibson, in my book.
And I'll add a fourth, Ingalls Wilder.
Yes, her as well. Although her guitar playing didn't really hold up.
Right. She was a specialist in the hammered dulcimer. That was really her. I think Pa made her one of those.
All right. Sure. So Laura Marling, she's very young. I still believe she's only about 20 years old. One of the things that I like about her is that she doesn't seem her age at all. I mean, she's very mature and very, very accomplished. So... it's not going to blow anybody away with its originality, but I do like this album a whole lot. So the song that I picked is called Goodbye England.
And then parentheses, covered in snow.
Yeah, she mentions that a couple times.
You were so smart then, in your jacket and coat, my softest red scarf warming your throat. Winter was on us at the end of my nose, and I never loved England more than when covered in. But a friend of mine says it's good to hear that you believe in love, even if set in fear. Well, I'll hold you there, brother, and sit you straight. I only believe true love is frail and willing to break. I will come back here, bring me back when I'm old. I want you late forever in the cold. I might be cold, but I'm just skin and bones, and I never loving more than I'm covered in. I wrote my name in your book, only God knows why. And I bet you that he cracked a smile. And I'm clearing all the crap out of my room, trying desperately to figure out what it is that makes me blue. And I wrote an epic letter to you, and it's 22 pages front and back, but it's too good to be used. And I tried to be a girl who likes to. I'm too good for that. There's a mind under this hat, and I called them all and told them I've got to move.
It's a little jarring to hear her use the word crap in that song. I mean, here you've got like a nice floating acoustic violin song, and then she's like, I'm clearing all the crap out of my room.
Yeah, well, this is a woman who inspired the guy from Noah and the Whale to write an entire album.
Do you know the guy that invented the flush toilet? His last name was Crapper?
Yeah,
I think that's a myth.
Well, no, it's on the internet, Barrett. No, I looked
it
up.
It's a myth, like evolution.
Is it a myth? Now we have to investigate this.
Let's cut that part out. I think it is.
I think it was in one of my kids' books. That
really?
The guy that invented it was named Crapper. And what a coincidence that is, too.
Right. But maybe what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Which like came
if
first,
you, if, the if crapper? One of your ancestors,
the toilet or the crapper?
The toilet. People would call it a Schneider.
The Schneider.
I gotta go take a Schneider.
People say that anyway. Yeah, what an honor that would be to be named after.
Oh man, I gotta go take a Barrett.
You just never. Yeah, you never know.
Now, Chris,
too much Taco John's.
You apparently believe that there are no rules also, because we were going to play two tracks, but you only gave me one. And now I kind of liked that one, and I'd like to hear another one, and I don't have another one.
Oh, well, I thought the assignment was to give you a track from a different band, two different bands, two different tracks.
Well, two tracks per band is what we were going to do.
Oh. I thought it was one as well, and if I didn't, you know, I brought this here, so it was easy to...
I'm going to assert that you guys didn't read my message closely enough. I'm going to not take responsibility for
this. I need somebody
to
read this stuff to me, really. And by the way, I should note that we're 2 for 2 on the flutes.
I heard the violins on that, too, and I thought, yep, that's what got Chris right there.
Yeah.
He just melted when the violins came
that's
in.
That's right. Me and the guy from Noah and the Whale just melt when we hear
yeah,
Laura
Marling.
Yeah,
the music is pretty similar. Like, if you went on to Pandora and made a little Curtis Mayfield station. Eventually, Laura Marling.
Absolutely. Well, so now I think I'm going to, when I do my first album, I will dedicate it as well to Laura Marling. And it'll just be one in a long line of Laura Marling-inspired albums. Mm-hmm. Knowing the Whale and Me. And, of course, Ludacris's last album was all about Laura Marling.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Lil Wayne loves her. Yeah.
There's a lot of things I didn't know about Laura Marling.
She inspires artists of all genres.
The last Jim Nabors album, I believe.
Curtis Mayfield would have written an album about her, too. But right. It's just that the timing wasn't right.
No, it wasn't.
Maybe if she were dealing drugs, we could slide her in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. You know what I think you guys need? After that smooth Curtis Mayfield and this mellow stuff, I need to wake you guys up.
Please.
Okay?
Please.
So I'm going to do that for you.
Rock me gently.
Okay. And it's not even going to be gentle. I'm sorry, but this is a band called Male Bonding. And I think they're a British band. I didn't really research them much. But they're a three-man band. Your basic guitar, bass, drums. Turned up pretty loud. And you should turn it up loud, too. They've got an album called Nothing Hurts. And I'm going to play a track called Weird Feelings.
Thank you.
That's one of 13 tracks, totaling 29 minutes and 28 seconds.
Nice. So I like them.
They don't
like
waste time.
You guys are two for two. I could see myself liking that a great deal.
I saw this at the record store, and it's on Sub Pop.
Yep.
They don't have a lot of British bands on Sub Pop, do they? Or am I just wrong? I never think of them as...
Yeah, I don't know if I can think of any.
You think they are, huh? From again, you know, the music, the voice doesn't give it away. Makes it hard to figure out, but...
What were you... You were writing something during that song. What were you scribbling over there?
Well, just the titles all together were kind of suggestive. Male bonding plus nothing hurts plus weird feeling. It was just... Oh,
you're trying to sense a theme?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've just verified they're from London.
London, Ontario?
Word has just come in from London that's where they're from?
London, England.
Oh, London, England.
And they that sometimes... London. That track would be fairly typical. Fast, short, but sometimes they're a little bit slower. So I'm going to give you an example of another one. Because I'm going to follow my rule and play two. This track is the longest cut on the album at a whopping 2 minutes 47 seconds. It's called Franklin.
Yeah, I like that. That one had kind of a...
They slow it down and turn up the reverb.
Right.
Yeah, the first...
sounded like a late 80s song to me.
Really? The first song sounded like very much within the spirit of like the Soft Pack or the other bands we'd been listening to earlier in the year. But then that song kind of sounded... It almost had kind of like a little Vampire Weekend type of kind of slowed down like Afro pop beat to it.
Maybe anyway, a little bit? It's...
I can hear that now.
I didn't think Vampire Weekend, but... well, you got to listen to the whole thing. It's a nice, quick, little bit thrashy, kind of fun listen. Okay, we're back to Barrett now.
Back to me.
Yep.
Well, for the second one, I followed Will's instructions more carefully.
Good to hear.
Although, you know, now we're averaging. We've played six songs. That's two apiece on average. So, Chris, you're off the hook, kind of. So, my band is Phosphorescent, and the song I'm picking is called Mermaid Parade.
New York this morning, it was 8 a.m. And I could be there by this evening, said the girl on the airline line. So I bought that ticket, and I got in that cab. Oh, but I didn't make it, babe, to the airport like that. Wow, well, I wound up walking out by the ocean today. And there were naked women dancing in the mermaid parade. Oh, Amanda, did you see me today? Watching those women dance in the mermaid parade. Oh, Amanda, did you see me? watching those many moths burn in the mermaid parade.
So right when you faded out, he was starting to get into the story a little bit. Basically, he'd been married for a couple of years, and he took a two-week trip out to New York. Got up, he was going to take a cab to the airport, but instead he went to Coney Island and watched the mermaid parade. And then he's talking to his ex-wife about, you know, how in 2 weeks their marriage, which had looked so good, just kind of disappeared. And it's one of these kind of melancholy story songs that I like. It reminds me a little bit of the song Denver by Clem Snide, although the protagonist in this is not as big of a heel.
Did he actually leave his wife for a mermaid, or
no,
this about Tom Hanks and
no, the mermaid parade is just a freak parade they have in
so it's not
Brooklyn.
Based on the movie Splash.
No, he finds somebody else and she finds somebody else, and he's just kind of talking about it, and you know, it's sort of like what happened and whatever, but God, what a horrible the thing that happened to us. That's just a sad story.
Boy, you just really brought it down.
Yeah.
Phosphorescent is just basically one guy, right?
It's one guy. It's sort of like, you know, is it one guy or is it a band kind of a thing, you know? On the website that listed, like, there's a, you know, the drummer and about five different guys, but it's really kind of the one guy.
Now, he had an album that everybody was kind of raving about a couple of years ago, and I went and I got it, and I can't remember liking it a whole lot. I think I ditched it pretty early, but this one I like a great deal.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that album, and I might have even heard it from you, and I was like, you know, so when I got this, I wasn't even really familiar with what it was going to sound like. But mm-hmm. I do like this a lot, and if, I don't know, I should go back and revisit that other one and see if it's...
Yeah, I still have it.
Something I'd also like.
Check it out.
Yeah, I like this one quite a bit, with the exception of, there are a couple tracks that I didn't like much, but more than half of it, I think, is pretty good. Do you have another suggested track, Barrett?
Well, let's play Los Angeles, because we kind of have a New York song with the Coney Island thing and Los Angeles. But this whole thing, I think, has kind of a, you know, like a laid-back Southern California country rock sound to it, you know? So let's hear Los Angeles, how it compares. That one could almost be an early My Morning Jacket song.
Yeah, I was going to say it kind of reminds me of A.A. Bondi, who we've reviewed on this show before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. And it's got this kind of cool combination that it sounds kind of mellow, but it's also kind of lush. Like when those backing vocals come in, there's like a lot going on.
Right.
It's cool.
We're like whispering now.
I think
it's really brought it down.
I did my story about that.
We have like our album oriented rock FM tone right now. Yeah.
Right.
You have to talk like this after you hear something like that.
Yeah.
Right. We're like, what is that one guy in WKRP in Cincinnati, the crazy guy?
Les Nessman?
No, the rock guy.
Johnny something.
Fly.
Venus Flytrap.
No, that's like the soul guy. What's the other guy's name?
There had to be a Johnny something, wasn't there?
You know who I'm talking about. He had like the smoky sunglasses and the long
frizzy
hair. That was too long ago.
We can look it up while we're doing my song.
Anyway, we're all trying to sound like that. Subconsciously.
That was about as specific as your explanation of like the sound, like the Southern, was it Southern California, Southern rock?
Yeah, it's got...
That's a pretty specific...
Don't you think? I mean, that's not... That kind of the phosphorescent, I don't think it has like a Nashville sound to it.
That's like it's saying like the, you know, it's got kind of that, you know, I'm wearing like flip flops and doing the dishes kind of feel to it. Or
right. Like, do you guys don't think about things that way?
Oh, yeah. I do.
Chris is maybe Chris needs to loosen up a little bit and stop being so literal, you know?
You know, I was kind of, Chris, perplexed by the first track on this album. I couldn't decide what to think of it because I sort of liked it, but then I thought to myself, is this kind of like the Grateful Dead? Do you think it sounded kind of like the Grateful Dead? And I never really listened to the Grateful Dead because I didn't want to, and then I was kind of thinking, I don't know, I'm not sure if this is...
My familiarity with the Grateful Dead is, you know, you just can't help but hear some of their songs, but everybody said that... Ryan Adams' Cold Roses sounded like the Grateful Dead.
Hmm.
Like, huh, that's not the Grateful Dead that I'm familiar with, but maybe they draw from the same inspiration there.
Could be. I remember a famous writer, and I can't remember his name, but, you know, if you guys heard his name, if I heard his name, you know, I'd recognize it. He was one of those old famous rock music writers for Rolling Stone, and I remember him saying the Grateful Dead is probably the worst band ever that got famous. He was like, wow. This band, I mean, really, he was really hard on him. He was like, these guys are not any good.
You realize what city we're living in. You're gonna have to bite your tongue. Speak in hushed tones.
I hate the Grateful Dead too. Don't you?
Yeah, I lived in a house in college with all deadheads, and it was...
You're revealing more about your college experience maybe than... We know what happens in those houses.
Yeah, absolutely.
My God, Chris.
Yes, I heard plenty of Uncle John's Band and Box of Rain and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, see, I only know the first song that you mentioned, Box of Rain. Never even heard of it.
And they're, they actually followed the Dead around until Jerry Garcia died. And then there was always the search for the next Dead, you know, the next band everybody's gonna follow around. Is it Fish? Is it gonna be Widespread Panic, or is it gonna be, I don't know, whoever?
Phosphorescent.
I thought it was supposed to be Fish.
Let's yeah.
It was another Fish band that I never listened to. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't get that.
Dave Matthews seemed
crap.
To get seemed to get quite the following there for a while. Yeah. A lot of the same types of folks, but
I guess.
But I think if you look at like the two fan bases,
yeah,
you have like a lot of frat boys liked the Grateful Dead because they liked, you know, to smoke bongs and play frisbee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the hippies. But I think it's only the frat boys that liked
Dave Matthews.
But a lot of them were Grateful Dead.
Yeah, I've written about this. I mean,
that is a strange combination to me because Dave Matthews, just to me, he seems like a pop rock kind of guy.
Yeah.
I don't know where the Grateful Dead fit in with him.
I mean, he claimed to have all the... He's from South Africa, so he claimed to have all, like, the South African influence and, you know, all the rhythms and that type of stuff. But, I mean, people forget, Dave Matthews was the most popular musician in America for a good 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Like, he was the only guy selling out selling out major stadiums there for in like 97, 98. So, I mean,
I think I wasn't paying any attention then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he was huge. Yeah. I never got into it.
You know, the music is actually decent, and it's, I think people don't like him because they don't, it's a case where people don't like the people that liked him. Like, yeah, people didn't like the whole kind of like frat guy, obnoxious,
right?
You know, typical follower of Dave Matthews. But I've defended the music in the past. So anyway, I have an album, I believe.
You do. You're up, Chris.
Yes. And let me preface this by saying I've been listening to this for a couple weeks without knowing anything about this band whatsoever. I just, you know, I strictly liked the music. Didn't know what they looked like. Didn't know their names. Didn't know anything about them. And then I come to find out, just in preparation here, that they're from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And they're part of the whole, I guess it's turning into like a kind of a creative collective up there of like Bon Iver and Justin Vernon's old band, DeYarmond Edison, originated in Eau Claire. And they're really, really good.
What are they called?
They're called the Daredevil Christopher Wright.
Oh, okay.
And what made you start listening to them before you even knew they were from Eau Claire?
Well, I just had a friend who went to college with them or something, or you know, just pitched it to my friend Jenny, and so I gave it a listen and really liked it a lot. Again, didn't know anything about them, but it seems to be kind of this creative community in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. That you know, it's not going to be the next Seattle or anything, but there certainly seem to be some talented people up there. So. I would say it maybe has a little Bon Iver influence, but also a lot of kind of weird instrumentation, a lot of experimental type of instrumentation, and I think a good example of that is the song "Clouds," which I think we can start off with.
Okay, and the album is called "In Deference to a Broken Back." I really wasn't expecting them to rock out like that.
Right, like it started off with the little, you know, plinky pianos and stuff.
Fairly typical of a lot of songs on there. I mean, I have to speak in hushed tones when I speak of like Sufjan Stevens, but I mean, it some of it kind of has that type of feel to it.
Right. Yeah, I liked it. It's the kind of thing you can't really get a feel for it listening to just one song. I think you need to hear more.
You need to hear more?
Well,
it just so happens I actually have more.
All right.
I should also mention that this album is actually produced by Justin Vernon, a.k.a. Bon Iver. So he is involved in this project as well. So, although he's not in the band.
Not in the band.
Right.
Okay, what do we got next?
All right. Let's play the song. There's actually a song near the end of the album called The Daredevil Christopher Wright. There's a song named after the band. So... It is about a daredevil, in fact, and it's more of kind of a straightforward type of folk song. There are two types of songs on here. There's that kind of song that kind of goes back and forth, and then there's also your straightforward folkier song. So let's play that song. That's kind of the more standard type.
Dangerous, dangerous, you know that is his name. He's the guy driving cars off cliffs, ticking whips into lions' dens to teach them how to dance. Villainous, villainous, that is what they'd say as his car burst to flame and ash, and they'd watch between the cracks of their fingers to see him crash. And oh, I wanna grow up to be Christopher Wright. And oh, I wanna grow up to be Christopher Wright. Don't you know that everyone half hopes that they'll see him die tonight? Don't you know that everyone half hopes that they'll see him die tonight? That's the life of Christopher Wright.
That's good. I'm like looking it. Forward to listening to the whole thing.
I'm going to offer the dumbest piece of musical analysis of all time. But you know who his voice reminds me of? The guy from Arctic Monkeys. They do have a song on their first album called Riot Van where he's just sort of singing in a almost like really hushed tones and stuff. Sounds just like him.
Really?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have guessed that. So the budding music metropolis of Eau Claire, Wisconsin gives us another band.
Wow.
Yeah. I should also mention that they are playing the Union Terrace on July 8th, I believe.
So, well, yeah. There's something to keep in mind.
It's a Friday night, I think. We'll
and
have to go down and see
this Saturday at the Union Terrace is Kings Go Forth.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we probably need to try to make it down there, don't we?
Well, my wife... She's not listening, so I think I can say whatever. She planned a trip, like she and the neighborhood women mm-hmm. planned a trip to Devil's Lake, like one of these group campgrounds. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to pick out what I want to do for Father's Day. So I'm thinking we're just going to go Friday night and come back because I want to go to that show too.
How dare she?
Seriously, would you be like, what if the three of us were like, hey, for Mother's Day weekend, let's go. There's like a cool band playing in Chicago. Let's all go there.
I don't know if I'd be allowed in the house if I got back.
Men are more forgiving.
I suppose one could say that.
You are going to edit this later, right? And you can cut that part out about what I said about my wife.
I think, the recorder was rolling when you said it. So, you know, it's kind of like the reporter, you know. The recorder's on, and
you never said off the record.
It's on the record, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So
then I'll mention one more thing about Bon Iver. Somebody retweeted something today from Jessica Simpson, and she tweeted like, "Oh my God, I just like totally discovered Bon Iver." So,
oh,
there
man.
You go.
Wow, this guy.
So she and her bazillion followers. It's probably a good thing for him, but a bad thing for. The rest of us.
There's a good chance that his next, like, because his last album was all about, is like a breakup album, so his next album will likely be like a breakup album about Jessica Simpson.
That could be.
Or Laura Marling.
Jessica Simpson likes the Wisconsin guys.
That is
Tony
true.
Romo.
Tony Romo, sure.
You know, Justin Verner.
Wow.
That's two.
Okay.
You know, there's an album that it's going to get like the buzz, right? When there's a new Bon Iver album coming out.
Sure.
And it'll probably be like, it'll be like the National. It'll be so anticipated that there's going to be, it'll be bound to be a letdown to some people because they'll be anticipating it too much. Just a thought, because, you know, his first album got that real huge groundswell, you know.
Well, he put out an EP that I didn't really like all that much.
The Blood Bank EP. Yeah.
That was a little too eclectic for my taste.
Had a couple good songs on it, I thought. Yeah, but not the whole thing. Yeah.
You know what the next one? It's going to be like a Starbucks-only thing, I'm guessing. That's just a guess. And if I'm right...
It could happen.
Then you guys have to go buy it for me at Starbucks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to go totally mainstream on you guys. You know how... I think we've talked about this before, how your expectations can affect how much you like something. So if you're expecting nothing and it's, you know, halfway decent, then you might like it even more just because you weren't expecting it to be any good. And if you're expecting something to be great, it might be just good and you'll just kind of write it off because it just didn't meet your expectations. So there's a new album by Band of Horses, and I really liked their first album a lot, and I liked their second one almost as much as the first one. And they're coming out with a third one, and I thought, they don't have anything left in them. I'm not going to like this. I just don't think I'm going to like it. And I heard a couple, you know, the pre-release tracks, and I thought, these aren't that great. So, but I decided I should buy it and put it on while I was doing some work in the office, and didn't like it at all the first time through. And I was almost just ready to write it off. And then I thought, well, might as well listen to it one more time. And when I put it on the second time, it started to creep into my brain. And then by the third time, it was like, this is a really pleasant album. It's not really hard-hitting. It doesn't have, like, as many real highs, I don't think, as the first two. But it's actually more consistent. There's one really terrible track. There's one kind of mediocre track. But the rest of it's really pretty solid, pretty good, I think. So, you know, maybe you'll hate it, too, the first time you hear this, if you haven't heard it before. But I'm going to play a little bit. This one's called Laredo. Album is about half sort of mid-tempo southern rockers like that and half ballads, and I think most of them are pretty good. Let me just play one of the ballads. This is the title track, Infinite Arms.
Your neighbor about to give birth and then
They've got just one guy of the original band. It's the singer, not surprisingly.
Wow. All the other horses have...
left the stable.
Left the stable.
Yeah. Ben like Bridwell that. Is his name. They're from the Seattle area.
I like that second song. First one, you know, maybe I'd need to hear more. But it just sort of sounded like kind of a generic Band of Horses song about like what I would have expected, but... That might have been your first reaction.
It was, Will. Actually. Yeah. Yeah. So, and for some reason, I just warmed up to it.
Yeah.
So.
I'll have to give that a listen.
My favorite thing about Band of Horses is the best song on their last album was named Detlef Shrimp.
That's a great song.
For
yeah.
something. That is yeah. a great song. Yep. And just completely out of nowhere, they name it after the German small forward from the Indiana Pacers and Seattle yeah. Supersonics.
Yeah.
And a recent guest on 30 Rock, Parks and Rec.
Really?
Yes, he was a recent guest to a Pawnee telethon.
Was he playing himself?
Yes.
One thing they do on this album that is probably a criticism is that they don't feature his vocals as sort of solo vocals and, you know, kind of the soaring vocals that he had in some of the earlier stuff. There's a lot of this harmony thing where it's a little more homogeneous, so... that's sort of why I said there aren't as many tracks that really stand out, but the whole thing kind of just, when I put it on, I found it to have this sort of soothing effect in a good way. So that's it.
Yeah. It does have a soothing sound to it. All this stuff does. And I vow to listen to this one. What about you, Chris?
I vow to listen to it as well.
I'm going to, everything that you guys played tonight, I like, and I want to follow up on it.
I actually also have a bonus band.
A bonus band?
Yes. I am also breaking the rules. I brought three.
Okay.
So while I'm short in the total, I'll be even in the total song department.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So let me preface this by saying, I was driving back from Milwaukee with the wife at night, and it was dark, and I was there wasn't a whole lot of my iPod, and this just happened to be on there. And I played it all the way through, and it really was great. Just listening to it and remembering, you know, these old songs. Because I recently got a 4-CD box set of Roy Orbison's greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
And disc 2 is just absolutely fantastic. It kind of gives you this feeling of, like, I was thinking of the movie Goodfellas, like, you know, the restaurant scene where they like walk through the restaurant, everybody's looking at them, and life is great. And, you know, it just kind of gives you that feeling of, like, you know, the 50s. And,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it just, it kind of sets that, you're talking about setting the scene. It kind of sets that scene for you. So, one of his best forgotten songs, and with regard to Goodfellas, that's before, like, you get the cocaine habit and have to deliver the guns and make the spaghetti and all that, cook the pasta and all that kind of stuff. One of I think his best songs, and one of the songs on that album, was called Nightlife. And so I just, since people don't get to hear it that often, I thought I would just play a little bit of it just to fill out the potpourri a little bit. I think this is one of his best songs.
When shadows fall, the day is done. The mountaintops hide the setting sun. The magic of the night is here. For all young lovers far and near. Nightlife, ooh la la la. Stars coming out.
like I said, it's broken up into four separate CDs. And the first one is kind of like his very old stuff, where he's kind of like in a doo-wop teenage band. And then the latter ones are where he's kind of, you know, he's older and he's kind of doing live performances. But the second disc is really his wheelhouse. Like, he's got songs like Crying and, right. you know, all the hits. So
don't answer this if you know. Do you know what year this is from? Because I'm trying to think in my mind. I was going to try to guess.
Are we going to get the answer from iTunes here?
I don't know. I guess we could, maybe.
I'm going to guess 1960.
I think it's probably a little later than that.
I was going to say 62.
Yeah, 63, 64, something like that.
Okay, I think we've all staked our
prediction. All right, I'll say 64.
Ding, 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 ding. 1962.
Yes, very nice.
And I really just guessed. I mean, this is something Barrett would know better than I would.
1964.
I said 63, 64, and then I think I settled on 63.
What if we were playing...
I wasn't giving myself...
What is that game show where if I bet, like, if I said a dollar and you were a dollar over, then I win. I win.
So you'd have guessed year...
closest without going over.
You'd have guessed year one. Like, Jesus is just born.
I'd have said it wasn't even...
And yeah. you would have won, and you would have bragged about
it's
that.
The beginning of the dawn of civilization, that song was recorded.
Baby Jesus, 1 year old. And you said you think you would have been closer than me.
How about we all won?
We all kind of won.
Well, no. I mean, I won. I said 1962. So let's be clear. Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny, because Will would be the one that I'd expect, like, to declare us all winners.
See, but Will edits this podcast.
And I'd be the
Will
one.
Will can go back. Like, what year do you think this was, guys? We're like 1963, 64, I say 60. And it'll sound different. It'll be like 1962.
It'll sound spliced, right?
Spliced.
No. It's going to be legit.
That's not the way I remember it.
There are a lot of songs on there that I know it was kind of accepted to kind of swap songs back and forth between artists kind of back in those days. You know, the Beatles did it all the time. They did Chuck Berry songs and whatever. But there are a lot of songs on there that I think originated with him that were redone by other people and became more popular. Like, there's a Linda Ronstadt song. What was it? Tracks of My Tears, something like that, where it was a big hit for her, but he originated it. So there are a lot of familiar songs on there, and that really is his wheelhouse, and it's just outstanding.
You know, that idea of the, you know, you're playing the iPod in the car, that occurred to me like 3 weeks ago. I put my iPod on random, and a couple things came up that I hadn't heard for so long, and I'm like, oh, man, I should talk about this. This is great. You know, and then another song came on. I'm like, wait a minute, I should talk about that. You know, it's kind of fun. So some week when we can't come up with a band, we'll do the what randomly played on my iPod.
We just play like 10 random songs and talk
about
them.
That's all we can do, yeah. Yeah. Plug in your iPod and put it on random, and then we'll
analyze it. That could get dangerous.
Yeah. We might have to allow a little bit of discretion, you know.
Right. The first song that's any good that comes up.
There's like an 18-minute Sigur Rós,
like, yeah, exactly.
Nothing but like rumbling.
Yeah. You can make a rule, like you have to pick like 5 out of the first 20 that pop up or something like that, you know. We'll come up with something.
This is what I'm telling Barrett for his coffee house. You should have iPod night, where you pay $5 and you get to plug in your iPod for a half hour, and everybody in the coffee shop has to listen to whatever's on your iPod. And if it sucks, you get your money back. Or you have to pay $5 extra.
Yeah, there you go.
You're penalized if you put stuff that sucks on.
Because somebody could put on, you know.
They could try to get everybody to leave the store.
Yeah.
Right, you know.
You put on, like, Night Ranger.
Yeah.
And get more people in.
I mean, you could put some thrash metal on.
You put Sister Christian on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Motorhead!
That's a good idea, but I think we'd need... fine-tune the rules.
These are all... See, we're brainstorming here.
Yep.
The history is being made in this room right now.
And it's real, you know? Despite the amount of time that Chris puts into preparation, there's still a spontaneity factor involved.
It's organic.
Yeah. Because we take him off script sometimes, and he gets this look on his face like, oh, no. But...
Right.
I usually overturn a table and run out of the room screaming.
Yeah.
Every time I leave the script.
Okay. It's getting long again, you guys.
All right.
Think anybody made it to the end?
No.
Probably maybe a couple people. You deserve a reward if you did.
What do they get? How about one, if you're still listening, you get a bonus. One more pick from each of us. Just kidding.
All right. I think it's time to say goodnight and hope to talk to everybody in cyberspace. And we'll be back again next week, maybe with something new. We'll see. Good night.
Good night.
Show you right.
He did it again.